Welcome to the Cheltenham School Board Meeting Podcast, online at www.cheltenhamlocal.org or at www.cheltenham.fm.
Cheltenham School Podcast, Finance Committee Meeting, complete recording, May 3, 2016.
The May 3rd Financial Affairs Committee meeting to order. We will begin with a roll call. We will start with you, Mr. Cohen.
Present.
Bill England.
Present.
There you go. Jules.
Stephanie Green.
There you go.
Brian Malone.
And Napoleon. All right. We're still here. I will now be seeking a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The minutes have been approved. We will move on to the third item, the budget update. I'll turn over to Ms. Mike.
Thank you. Okay, so this is the normal run-of-the-mill budget update for 15-16. As you can see, we're about 90% of revenue collection and about 76% of expenditures. Nothing's really jumping out at this point in the year. I do anticipate there will be an update about the state budget. They have passed a bill that gave distribution numbers, so I anticipate probably in June, the June unit pay is when we'll be getting a lot of our money from the state, so I do anticipate that we'll be getting all of our state money. Outside of Plan Cotton, that's the only one that they're talking about. It still remains uncertain. They are not saying that we're not going to get it, just when we're going to get it. So the state budget update. House Bill 1589, which is the fiscal code bill, if you remember from last presentation, that was not passed, that gave a lot of direction on the additional BEF money and just distributions to districts. That became law last week, and it was without Governor's signature. So what that means is that the basic ed funding will be distributed using the formula recommended by the Basic Ed Funding Commission. I don't know if you guys remember, there was that big push and the commission was put out. There was a lot of meetings at the IU and discussion about this. The Ready to Learn Block Grant funding, that was distributed in December. It was based on the governor's methodology, so this fiscal code bill based it on the methodology used in 14-15. Plan Con, this remains uncertain. They are saying that we're unlikely to receive funds by June 30th, not that we won't receive funds, that's due, but not by June 30th. But what the House bill did for Plan Con is it allowed for a borrowing proposal that's been discussed up at the Commonwealth to be presented to the financing authority. It also called for the formation of an advisory committee, which the advisory committee has a deadline that they will have to make recommendations about a new Plan Con program. There is a moratorium placed on new projects, which is effective May 15th, and that'll go through the remainder of 15-16 and through the fiscal year 16-17. So any project that is not submitted by that May 15th deadline will not be in for any type of Plan Con funding. How this impacts...
I'm sorry, and that is for the six, and it goes through 16-17.
Yes.
Does that mean 17-18 that we don't know?
Correct.
Okay.
So that's for new projects. It's not for our funding. It's okay. For funding that we currently have Plan Con projects in the docket. It is for any new projects that you want to put through the Plan Con process.
Okay.
There's a moratorium on them accepting new projects.
Okay. Okay.
So Cedar Brook was in for Plan Con, so that made the deadline, so it will not be moratorium. So how this impacted us, the state budget, you will see the 14-15 funding, 15-16, the variance and what the increases were. So basic ed, we're going to receive an additional $176,000. Ready to Learn Block Grant went up about $79,000 and some change, and special ed funding went up about $90,000 and some change. And actually, those were updated because those are figures that were based on estimates released by PDE on Monday. They may change a little bit, but these are the best guess estimates that we have. So that's the 1516 budget.
Questions from the board? Yes, Mr. Engel.
Question is, you may or may not be able to answer this, but in terms of the PlanCon funding, not specific to us, but in general, they were going to take $2 billion worth of debt to make payments that they owe to school districts such as Cheltenham.
Yes.
Are you aware of anything happening in terms of any districts getting any funding or if they've...
Right now, based on the information that I presented with this House bill, that is the direction that they gave, is that basically it's going to allow for that borrowing proposal to be presented to the financing authority. So they're going to be discussing that. Before, that was, it was like up in discussion, it wasn't even a recommendation. This formation of the PlanCon Advisory Committee, there's some tight deadlines that they have to make recommendations on how to change the program. So I think more is going to be coming out, but there's no decisions made. This is just kind of giving a nudge to get PlanCon talked about again.
Gotcha. And follow up, how do we get David Cohen on that advisory committee?
I think he's way ahead of you. Any other board?
Quick point, going back to how much the state still owes us, about $5.7 million, Ms. Michaels, is you seem to indicate that you're pretty confident we should collect all, pretty much all of that.
Yes.
Like,
95% of the
95%, okay.
Again, still that 200,000, is that still likely to not come back to us? No, you mentioned 10,000 for Social Security?
That got taken off the table. And I reported that out in one of my updates that we are now going to the change of funds.
Oh, that's good.
You must say, who was the plan? We're in about the $650,000 to $700,000 range. Budget-wise, though, last year, $350,000 was budgeted, and for next year, a year will be out. So if it does come in, it's additional funds.
Mr. Miller.
Can we go to the third slide? Next one. So I'm confused. Does that mean that we're getting more money than we originally budgeted, or more money?
Yes. Basically, what this is showing is finally now that the 15-16 budget has been finalized and this bill has been passed, we now know what our distributions are for the 15-16 school year. So what they're anticipating, and again, what they're calling them are estimates that these numbers may change. What happens is we get funding from the state in what's called a UniPay. The June UniPay is when all the reconciliations are going to happen. So that's when we'll find out definitely what the funding is, but this is the best guess. So yes, based upon how the 15-16 state budget started, we were advised to be conservative and budget what we received from 14-15. So this is to show the variance portion shows the additional funds on top of what we budgeted that we will receive from 15-16.
So you would have an additional $370,000.
Benzate Sprint Cup. Forgive me if this was explained, I'm not the best with numbers, but the variance of the two that are right around 4%, I see that in the other ones like 30.5%. Is there anything that, is that normal for year to year, or is there anything that happened that we expect
they,
to us
the ready they to increase the allocation for the ready to run block.
So across this, the whole state?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Actually, jumping to the 16-17 budget, order on this, but so 16-17 is going to be next. So I'm going to do a recap of the proposed final 16-17.
This was
on the agenda. It's So I want to do a recap from our last meeting, just to kind of bring everybody up to speed and get everybody's memory refreshed. So last meeting, we presented a recommended proposed final budget of $107,443,307. That was centered on district goals and strategic pathways. There was a reduction in the proposed tax increase from the preliminary budget from 2.4 down to 1.3, looking to reduce the impact on taxpayers. So what this does with that reduction is it takes the impact on taxpayers from the median home assessment from $1,285 a month or $154.15 a year down to $696 a month or $83.50 a year. We are filling the gap by committing $874,000 and some change of fund balance for the 16-17 budget. So that was the recap from the last meeting. This is the snapshot of the proposed final budget. What you are going to see that has changed, and this is a question that always happens throughout this process, is today we received the gaming money certification. So I was able to move the money, if you look in the preliminary budget column, which is the middle column, I was able to move that gaming money from the local revenue line item down into the state allocation now that we know our allocation. So that is the jump that you're seeing. It does not change any of the bottom line numbers. It's just a reshift from local revenue into state revenue.
I remember you had mentioned that before.
Okay. Again, this information just came today, probably about like 3 o'clock. We got our homestead gaming allocation. So it was certified at about $617 million statewide. That's a slight increase from the prior year, but you'll see that Cheltenham, our funding went down a little bit, about $7.24 from the prior year. Reason being is that there was a shift in the Sterling Act money, which is a factor in the calculation for the distribution of the gaming money. But this will be, for all the homestead properties, $440.52 will be reduced off the tax bill. And we did get the certification of the homestead properties that are eligible, and it's 8,030, which is a slight decrease from last year. So that $3.5 million is the amount that got shifted from the local revenue down into the state revenue.
How many properties in the township?
I don't know that. I can get that for you though.
15, 16. Yeah, I want to say there's 15,000 residential properties.
So probably about half. A little over half. Okay. So just to go back through the 16-17 priorities. And just putting this in front of the board again is the work that's being done on the strategic plan and the strategic pathways, because this is all connected and interwoven into the budget for next year. So the priorities, and I'm just going to punch this at the top, the professional learning and strategic plan implementation and exploration and prototyping. I don't have to go back through the punch list of items that are looking to be implemented for next year in connection with that.
Sorry, and to go back, that there, this is, there are some exploratory conversations that have added to this particular list. Case in point, there was a robust conversation about world language at the elementary levels and a commitment to beginning to create that space for those things to happen. I'm excited about that. I'm a fan of world language at the elementary. So though these are the big nuggets, there are some other things that have come up in our community conversations that will obviously not everything can live in the strategic plan, but there are some major commitments and desires to move in that direction as well.
Okay, other priorities are the technology initiatives, the one-on-one initiative for grades 9 through 12, and Elkins Park upgrade for technologies. And then positioning Cheltenham for growth and change. And this was instructional, operational, and administrative positions. Again, this is a recap of where we're at in the process for budget. So at the May 10th meeting, we're looking to adopt the proposed final budget. This will be on PDE 2028. I will have that up on the website by May 10th. And it will also be in the superintendent's office in case there's any inquiries for that. We will have a published publish the notice of intent to adopt the final budget, and at the June 14th meeting, we will adopt the final budget. So this long verbiage is the action item verbiage that will be presented at the May 10th meeting under the Finance Committee for approval.
For a question.
Yes, not to bore the people at a high level, can you just talk about the Sterling Act this year and what that was?
Mm-hmm. Yes. As this got mentioned last meeting, is the Sterling Act is the portion of the Philadelphia earned income that filters back or does not filter back into Sheltenham. So I actually have an update from that from the Montgomery County Tax Collection Committee. So basically, Montgomery County schools receive an average of 79% of Sterling Act funds through the gaming money. Basically, there's a push from the Bucks Committee to push to get all that money back or to have a bigger chunk of that. So the Montgomery TCC is also supporting that. And basically, where that stands, was to get 21 more percent. So it would increase that gaming money piece, because the Sterling Act is a part of the calculation when it comes to the gaming money that comes down from the state. So right now, we're getting about 79% of the Sterling Act money in that calculation, and we're looking to get 100% of that. Thank you.
Okay.
Other board questions? So I hate to have to do this, but I have one. The $345,000 that we're getting in 2015 that we weren't anticipating from the state, is that then rolling over into the 2016 prelim, since we basically had some degree of found money?
Did
that go away in 2016-17?
I did not adjust, and the reason I did not adjust is because I am very concerned about how 16-17 budget of the state is going to, what the talks are going to look like. Things just got finalized in May, so we're 96% through the year before they made decisions on distributions. In the event we do get the additional $310,000, I mean, it will roll over. It'll either go into fund balance as a part of those funds, and moving forward will increase the fund balance of that. The other piece, too, that you have to remember is that they're saying to account for that money, not necessarily when we're going to get it. So it'll be on the books, and we'll make sure that we recognize the revenue. When they're actually going to distribute it, that might not happen June 30th. So it might be a cash flow issue.
I just wanted to make sure that we had the conversation of, we've got additional revenues that weren't accounted for in 15-16. How does that impact the 16-17 budgeting process?
And the piece that it'll happen with is, in the event that that does roll over and move forward and it stays status quo, when we went back as an administration looking at how to reduce the tax impact, we went through the whole finite and non-finite things. The tax increase of the 1.3 are covering things that have to be sustained each year. Mm-hmm. So in the event that we get additional money from the state, it'll reduce the amount of money that we have to take out of fund balance. That's the plan moving forward. But as you can see, I mean, I'm not saying $300,000 is not a big chunk of money, but it's not 90% of our budget that would make that big of an impact.
Well, follow up on that, even though that's an increase, when you go back to the 9.7 million they still owe us, you said that may be a deep, we may not get all that. I mean,
because of plan con.
Right, so does that offset, I mean, plan con
dollars that we might not be getting in 2015-16, we weren't even budgeting for in 16-17.
Right.
So if we had,
I'm still going back on 15-16, I just wondered, is it all a wash or?
Possibly for 15-16, yes.
Even if that would be increased, and we get the increase from the plan. Okay, I just wanted to clear that out of my mind. Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, just to clarify, there are about 11,200 properties in the township, okay, including all the properties, the vast majority of which, of course, are residential.
Ms. Hayward.
This is probably formatted, it's probably performing in terms of the legislative action item, how it's worded. But is it possible to add the actual district online website to the notice? So, and the notice is hereby given the third, fourth line from the bottom, and online on the district's, school district's website at
The link.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to search around for what that is.
Okay. Any other board questions? To the public. There you go.
I realized at one point, Martin Schmidt from Glenside, and I realized that 1.3% increase is not a hell of a lot, but considering that people who are in fixed incomes get no increase this year at all, there's no social security increase at all, and our property values are going down, and people get outside of their houses in our neighborhood, and I'm just wondering if the school district is ever going to look at all their expenses and to see if they cannot be doing some of this. I have seen inefficiency in your maintenance. It is ridiculous. And I have documented it, you've gotten copies of the letter, the 30 minutes I've written. It was just ridiculous. And I wonder, when are you going to really examine your operations completely and see what is needed and what is not needed, where you can come back, cut back.
And we do that most years, and we did that again with this year's budget and with the master plan from our facilities and maintenance. So we have had those conversations, but we certainly take that in mind every time we sit down and build our budget.
Yes, Mr. Zates. Just to give an example on that, we tried to refinance our home, and we bought our home in July of 2006. I'm just going to say it for $275,000, and we put down 20% cash, and we could not refinance our home because our property value had sunk to around $235,000. And my wife and I both make a combined income of well over $100,000, so that was very frustrating. So I would love to see our taxes go down, and I'd love to see the schools get better, and I'd love to see more businesses come in. I think that's a win for everybody. Mm-hmm.
I sent a long email today to the people who were involved in the strategic plan. And one of the things I'm looking at is we have the high school now. We have 8 safety officers. 8. When my daughter graduated 10 years ago, she said there were 1 or 2. I don't know whether she's right or not, but we add and add and add. These are people who had no value in my opinion. Unless you think that fear is fear trumps everything. You know, when you have fear, then it trumps everything. If somebody comes in and says, oh, you got to do this for safety reasons. We add this, we buy this, we install security systems and all that stuff. It must cost thousands and thousands of dollars to do this, to have quote-unquote security. Because of a few individuals who might be bad at it. I'm wondering exactly how much we spend on security in this township. In this Cheltenham High School, Cheltenham School District.
I need a few of those numbers. I don't have the exact dollar amount. I know the reference to the number of security officers that we have or security individuals at the high school. At the time that the decisions were made to bring those additional individuals in play, I'm sure that there was need for that process. As we shift into a vastly different culture and system, that...
I would like that someone would explain to me what this means, call. What does it mean? Because it starts at the elementary school. Children come in and they're being told, they're not being told you can't do this. I was giving an example of Glen's Elementary. You have four bathrooms, right? You have two for children, boys and girls, then you have men and women. Instead of telling the children you cannot use the men or women bathroom, they lock them up. Then they tell the children, if you can't lock it up, then you have to have supervision. You have to have people inside the building, outside the building, constant supervision. It's like a prison. And these children are never learned that when somebody says no, it's no. And so they go all the way up to high school, and then in high school you still have eight security officers. My goodness, these are young adults. And they have not learned no is no. That is the problem. And it's not just here, it's throughout. I talked to a man who worked out at the Bucks company, a well-to-do high school. And he said, we had eight, but they had 2,000 students. I don't understand this whole culture of giving in to a few bad apples. I don't understand. And then they talk about culture, being cultural liberals. And what are the terms? I had another email that I sent out.
Sure, it's not a cultural proficiency?
No, cultural liberals. Mm-hmm. And what's the other term? I don't know where that comes from. I really don't. I think you should instill a culture of discipline, hard work, of responsibility, accountability, respect for everybody. You should instill culture. You shouldn't have to understand the culture and fear the culture that comes and walks in the door. I don't think.
Thank you. And I appreciate that, and that is much of the work that we do around this table and that our administrators and teachers do on a regular basis, so that has certainly been an active and ongoing conversation. Thank you very much. Any other public questions? And then, we've got one more.
Okay, this is a year in review of Cheltenham Food Service. So I'm going to give you some highlights of what's happened in 15-16, and this is in conjunction with Chartwell's. There's our current food service provider, so they're a great partner with us, and they do a lot with our students and work with our students to promote healthy eating and healthy habits. So I wanted to kind of highlight that tonight so that the board sees the work that's being done. So the first thing, if you recall from last year when we went through the bidding process, one of the things that Chartwell's did or pledged to do is that they were going to invest in our high school cafeteria. So this was a high school cafeteria refresh. They invested about $240,000 into the serving lines. So the serving lines were all revamped. There's new stations. It's more of almost like a college campus atmosphere where the stuff is made right in front of them instead of it being prepackaged. It's been very popular. We've gotten a lot of good feedback from the students with this. I'm not going to go through everything, but these are all the lines and all the stations that are offered at the high school. So each of those will tell you what is offered and kind of the new things. The big thing is that they created an Asian station, which is very, very popular. There are times that the chef actually is cooking in the wok right in front of them, so they make it right in front of them. They put the food in the Asian containers that they can take away. Very popular. So is the tomato station, which is a pasta bar, which that, again, is fresh. It's made to order. The wild greens is also very popular because it's like a salad bar. And again, if you go back and take a look, everything is right there.
Do they have sushi?
They do have sushi. They have done sushi. I'm not a sushi fan, so I wouldn't eat cafeteria sushi. They say stuff is popular. So
it's good food.
It is. I don't like sushi, so I can't speak on sushi. I wouldn't eat sushi from anywhere.
Okay.
So the next thing.
Then I actually, a lot of people from Pittsburgh.
Then I don't like sushi. 50% African American.
That's right.
Yeah, we have coleslaw on our sandwiches.
French fries too. No sushi.
Yes. So another thing that Chartwell's has done with their workers is promote safety of the workplace, investing for safety at all the schools by putting slip-resistant mats, new first aid kits, new thermometers for internal temperatures, cut-resistant gloves, employees all wearing slip-resistant shoes, and then just a monthly review and training on future safety issues with their staff. Another thing that's very popular, and they rotate schools every year, so there were three schools, Green Coat has not happened yet, but at EP and Myers this year, they have what's called the Chef to Schools program. So what happens is the chef actually goes to the school, and they will prepare things that kids normally don't even think about preparing. So you'll see at Myers, it was kale chips and roasted Brussels sprouts. It's very popular. The chef talks about the food, shows how the food that's healthy is good for you, and it's very popular with the students. They also went to EP and they did asparagus guacamole and beet crisp, which I heard the guacamole was really good. I didn't personally try it, but
again, not exactly your favorite.
So Wincoat's on the bill next to go through the chef to schools, and again, they rotate each year, so we make sure that we do hit the schools, so it's not just limited to each of the schools.
So, the chef is there for the full year, or he's just
no,
there?
No, he'll go every year. It's a promotional type thing, so he might show once or twice during the school year, too.
So you're from Chartwell?
Yes, okay. It's a Chartwell chef. Okay. The other thing is farm to schools. This is a program that I believe is relatively new with Chartwell's. They promote locally grown produce and support local farms. Mr. Freecon from Freecon Farms in Boyertown visited the fourth graders at Cheltenham Elementary to talk about the nutritional value of local produce. This farm is a family-owned farm. It's been in the works for 71 years. When you see the picture of their website and everything, it's his grandfather. So it's a family-owned farm, and it was really, really, it was very intensive, and the kids were very engaged in this. So the other thing, and this is another big thing, this got introduced this year, it's called NutriSlice. It is basically an app, website, and signage, digital signage, that allows the menus to be easily accessible by parents. It provides nutritional information on the items that are being offered on the menus. It also gives allergy information. The Chartwell staff were set up at all the back-to-school nights with computers, and they did live demos for the parents. So this is another popular thing that parents use to download this app so they can get on and see what the nutritional value of the lunches that are being prepared in the schools are.
Is that just iOS or is that Android TV app?
I believe it's both. Partnership and promotional events. These are just, I'm just hitting on a couple things that Chartwell's has partnered with us on the grand opening of Wincoat Elementary. Also partnered with the Unified Sports and the Special Olympics programs at the high school for the spring event that happened. Some promotions that are offered at all school levels that they do. So they'll do things for the Chinese New Year, so they'll have promotional things that they sell or the way that they cook the food, it'll represent that. Super Bowl specials, baseball opening day, they have a frozen yogurt bar, and they celebrate Earth Day. So those are just some of the things that I wanted to touch upon. Okay, so I want to get into the financial overview of food service. And just to kind of, I put everything in alignment with how you're used to seeing it, but just remember that the food service fund is not the general fund. So this is a very, very differently, it's handled differently, it's accounted for differently, because this is actually through reimbursements from the state for a free and reduced program and through people paying for lunch. So this gives you a snapshot of what the budget and what the receipts and expenditures look like for year to date for our food service fund. So our budget, if you'll see, total revenue is about almost $1.8 million. Our expenses are about $1.6 million. While you're seeing a gap there, again, this is the food service funds handled very differently. When we go through the RFP process, there's something that's put in there called a guarantee that when companies bid on our services, to get our services, they can do what's called a guarantee. What this means is that's the estimate of where we think revenues and expenses are going to land. This is what they project out. What they're doing is they're guaranteeing that we are going to get $162,000 back. What Chartwell's does, and where they're a little bit different than other companies, some companies guarantee based upon what the revenue or the profit is. Chartwell's guarantee is unconditional. So whether or not we hit those revenue numbers, they are going to guarantee, and it'll come out of their admin fee, the $162,000. That money has to then be recirculated back into the food service fund and used for food service items. So when we have repairs on equipment, when we have other things, that is where those funds come from. Okay, so you can see that we are about 1.3 in total revenues. On total expenses, we're about 1.2. I think for state and federal reimbursement, we're all the way through March, so we still have April, May, and June. Same with the local. Local is all your students that are not on the free and reduced lunch program. So those are paid, and it's also the a la carte things, items that are sold, and it's also the catering and other special revenue items. So looking at this, there's nothing that seems off to me right now with where we're landing at this point in time. So that's for the 1560, just to give you an idea of where we're at. So I want to give you a brief overview, because where we're at right now is we're at renewal time. For people that are not aware, or board members that were not on the board when we went through this process, we procure a food service management contract through a bidding process. However, it's very different than what you're used to when Dr. Bobby goes out to bid and does specs. This is regulated very heavily by the state. They actually have the forms that we have to use. We have to follow their guidelines. We actually have to get approval from the state and get them to sign off before we can come back and get signatures on our end. So they're making sure that we're following all of the federal laws and the state laws when it comes to the National School Lunch Program. So what happens when we go through a bidding process with a contractor is approved for an initial year with an option to renew for the four consecutive years. Ideally, unless you're there's anything that's egregious or that you're planning on changing contract language when you first go out to bid, the idea is that we're in a five-year contract. It's just basically we have the out each year to not renew the contract. If we don't renew the contract, we have to go through the rebid process. So normally how it's handled in a lot of school districts, you don't bid for a year and then go out to bid for the next year. There's about three or four major food service companies that handle contracts in the area, so it's not like you're getting new and fresh things all the time. It's pretty much numbers fall into place. There's nothing that's crazy, you know, off the charts when it comes to numbers. So we bid our food service management contract for the 15-16 school year. So this year was the first year and the initial year of the contract. The renewals are also regulated by the state. So there's paperwork that we have to fill out. There's signatures that we have to get. So what happens is current service provider, Chartwell's, will submit a proposed budget, which then the board approves. All the required documents are submitted to the state for approval. So once the board approves, we still have to submit to the state for approval to make sure that we're following guidelines with this. So here's the 16-17 renewal, and I did a snapshot against the 15-16 budget so you can kind of see. So here's the anticipation for where we're going to be with local. State federal revenues are going to be about $1.96 million. On the expenditure side, we're going to be about $1.8. The admin fee for Chartwell's is going up slightly. The state regulates that as well. There's a minimum that you can raise. I think it's like 0.07 cents. It's not a major number that goes up. But based on projections and where sales are, so they're looking at a guarantee for next year of about $155,000. So what we're requesting at the May 10th meeting is that we extend for an additional year the food service contract with Chartwell's at an operating return of no less than $155,623.
Board question.
So if you go back to the budget for next year, it appears that the, not appears, the local, state, and federal and total revenues are going up. I believe I saw information before, not in the presentation, but elsewhere, where the cost of the items are staying the same in terms of the various plans, maybe some a la carte items, but I'm not really sure. I guess the question is if the cost of the food items to the consumer, the students are staying the same, how is revenue, or what's the reason, rationale behind the revenue side going up, especially on the local?
There is some additional a la carte adjustments which will be submitted to the board for review. There was not major increases with those. And primarily the a la carte items are at the high school. The other piece to that is expectation on the catering services side, on the stuff that's off of the actual stuff in the schools. So they do a projection based upon this year, and sales are really, really good this year, and a big contributor to that is the high school because of the serving lines. They've seen that their revenue has gone up. So I would say that most of that is attributed to the high school.
Okay. And two other brief questions, not necessarily for answers, for the more rhetorical, I guess to be quoted outside this meeting, are the question about the access to water in all the cafeterias for the students. And the second question is recycling, which is, I think, is a broader conversation I've elsewhere about facilities, but specifically recycling in the cafeterias.
I can definitely answer the access to the water. Is that I believe last year, the year before, there was a state, actually came down from federal, that water has to be available in the cafeteria, and so they have to provide water with cups for students free of charge. Okay. So that does happen. The other thing that has recently happened is the student council working on the Go Green initiatives, that they've invested on refill stations. So there's new water fountains that are being put in at the high school that allow for the water bottles, and it's all recycled and filtered water.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. I had been wondering, this was very helpful, I had been wondering why we had a one-year contract with this provider, because I knew that they had just made a pretty good-sized investment over the last 2 years in our cafeteria. They transformed it. There's now what at one point in time was the senior cafeteria. Now, I don't think it's just seniors only, but so that was very useful to hear that, because I had never known. I mean, we've been talking a lot about a transportation contract locked in at 5 years, and when I heard this was 1 year, so the money that they invested in the cafeteria improvements, that was from Chartwell's, that didn't come, that's not derived out of the contract. This was their commitment to improving the serving capacity at the high school.
Absolutely, yeah. And in the bid process, we included the investment piece, so all of the bidders had the opportunity to provide what they would do for the district, and
Charlotte
was by far the highest.
This presentation you gave on their behalf this evening was very interesting. They're doing a number of educational things that I wasn't aware of, and you know, nor should I be. I'm not in these buildings. But the farm, the local buying, and the healthy snacks, and the apps to help families understand food consumption, I had no idea that they were doing any of these things.
I've talked to Maureen Cahill, who's the director of food service, works for Charles, and we're going to work with Chris and Sue O'Grady on their section of the website to make sure that we get this message out. Because I don't think people realize that the healthy initiatives and the green initiatives and those types of things that Charles partners with us to do for students. So we will make sure that we promote that.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, a link to their site, whatever the case may be, to get that information out there. But that's very important, and I do appreciate that you're working on that. And I would just echo what Mr. Cohen said in terms of the water. And I guess this is a question for finance. It's not on tonight's agenda. Let's test our water in all our buildings.
We just tested water.
Heavy metals.
Yeah.
Okay. Because clean filtered water is what we need. I've seen what they're putting in the high school. I saw the thing that was in the update. We've got 100-year-old pipes feeding this township.
Yeah.
I was not aware. I just slipped my mind.
Well, let me say that we did just do, Aqua came in and did a test at Myers, because there was a question raised and asked, could we do that and we facilitate that? I'd have to get back to the board in terms of what is that process, whether it's annually, every 2 years, or is it based on request? Very similar to that cycle, do we do that as a periodic check? But I think that the Myers came out of a request from a particular entity saying, I think you should check your water. And I think it came probably on the heels of a neighboring school district that had some issues that drafted that. But for the other six buildings, that's a good question. I can look into that in terms of that process. But there is no doubt that yes, we do have we have open. Yeah. The test came out thumbs up in terms of not having letting them.
Yeah, no, the pipes are old, and there's nothing, they aren't our pipes, but they transport all of our water. And Aqua or Independent, even something to give us an idea off the shelf, is probably a good investment, just to get an idea.
Sure.
Then we can talk about budgeting money for water filters if we need to, but I mean, it's just a very serious matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess a statement, not a question. Thank you for your work on this. This was very eye-opening.
Just thank you. Really good information. I echo your concern about lead in the water. So.
Mm-hmm. We'll get that. Yeah.
I just mostly comments. I was able to go when the other companies came in to bid, so I was available. So I was able to go into the high school and see what Chartwell was doing there and what some of the other companies proposed. We were over to Cedarbrook. I got to meet some of their employees. They were very enthusiastic. The food looked very good. I was a little hungry at the time. I didn't take any pizza, even though it looked really good. And I knew about how much I was aware that they were going to invest more than the other companies. But this was also eye-opening for me. I knew they were very involved in our school district, but I didn't realize how many programs they're involved with. And this was, I mentioned to Kara earlier, this was really a nice presentation of what they're doing above what I thought they were doing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is great information and eye-opening. I guess I was interested in whether there was any kind of a feedback loop to the students from them in terms of satisfaction, things that they'd like to see. Not that we need to cater to every single whim of the students, but I mean, in terms of customer satisfaction, it'd be interesting to know what the students' response is to this change.
Dr. Marcin and I actually just talked about that. He asked the same question in terms of satisfaction, what's the mechanism. Right now, it's filtering through the schools. There's a manager at each school. Usually, if there's an issue, the students do talk to the managers. There's no particular on the website type of feedback thing. I talked to Maureen today about trying to institute something for next year to make it so that, you know, there is a mechanism that if there is dissatisfaction with the food, or even positive things to say about the food, that they have an outlet to do that. A lot of it is verbal, emails happen, they're very reactive and proactive to complaints or any type of feedback. So a lot of it is dealing one-on-one with people. But we are looking at implementing that for next year.
How about the efficiency of moving the kids through? I mean, are there long lines? Are you kind of thinking about, the capacity?
I'll say this, because I do spend, and others and other buildings might be jealous, but I do spend a disproportionate number of hours.
I've heard that from some of the high
schools. I've eaten all those lines. It just brings me back, because that was my lens, and I love the cafeteria, that's where everything happens. So I used to love lunch duty. But I was really mindful in terms of paying attention in terms of what was happening in the cafeteria, the fluidity of the lines, mm-hmm. how quickly they go through.
the amount of minutes that it actually takes for a student to get online as soon as the bell rings, to grab their food and sit and eat. So it's extremely efficient because we do provide 47 minutes for students to eat lunch. And as just to put it out there, I think that's an excessive amount of time, considering my analysis shows, even though I've been in places where after a while students complain to say, oh, 30 minutes is not enough for lunch, I'm scrambling. But when you sit and you take anecdotal analysis, you realize actually 30 minutes is perfect because it took you 6 minutes to get from the time the bell rang to the line, to your food, you sat down, you ate, you push your tray over and you spend the next 16 minutes doing whatever it is that teenagers do. Sometimes it's in their seat, sometimes it's not. So it does run very efficiently, not only because of the time, because I did time it to say, from my lens, when I was thinking about the high school schedule and thinking differently about how we put some more time into instruction, I realized that every student got their lunch and ate within 30 minutes and had time to eat and have a conversation with that process. So it does run very well, and the fact that there's so many stations to choose from, I don't see, though the stations are, I don't see one place that is more popular than the other where I would see a line going around the bend for, I don't know, the salad. Now, for in terms of feedback, I did receive from student government some feedback about the food. The first was recycling in the cafeteria and the importance of that, and wanting more support with that endeavor from the administrative perspective. Portion size came up where they the representative of the student body said that they believe Chartwell's was giving too large of portions, and that as students, as they were visually combing through the trash bins, they realized an excessive amount of food was being thrown away in terms of sustainability and things of that nature. There was one request for, could we get, when they make my salad, could they put more lettuce and instead of cheese? I don't know. It was one of those things. I was like, ask for more lettuce. but besides those three, that's what I've been brought to my attention in terms of how students are processing that. And when I ask about the lunch minutes, and they all agreed that 47 minutes was exactly the amount of time that you need to eat, because they do not want to go down to 30, because they like 47 minutes.
Just to piggyback on what your question was, at the lower levels, the time that it's not even an issue, it's just a learning thing, because of the National School Lunch Program, the kids have to enter a PIN, because you have to do it in a way that's not don't disclose.
Right.
So what happens is at the beginning of the year, the kindergartners are the ones that it might take a little bit longer at the beginning of the year for them to get through, but the aides are there to help them with that. And the lunch staff also helps them. The kindergarten teachers do a good job, because I think they wear or they have their pin somewhere on them, so that if they do forget it, they have it so that they can do it. But that's the only time, is usually at the beginning of the year, but Chartwell's is very accustomed to how that is, and they've made adjustments to make sure that there's no backlog of students.
I was just going to comment on your question about feedback, Ms. McWilliams. I was lucky enough last year to go to a student council meeting at Myers, and Maureen was there, and kids, you know, she asked them, well, what are your favorites, you know, what are some things you don't like, and it was just, I mean, she was, you know, I gave the kids like 45 minutes and listened to all the requests. The toughest one she had was, I think one young man asked him, why don't we have gummy bears? You know, she had to respond to that. But I don't know if she did that at all the elementary schools, but she did it at Myers last year. I'm on the wellness committee. I guess I am the wellness committee. That's why I was invited. But anyway, I was impressed with that.
The only other thing then that I'd like to bring up is, and I don't think it's for this specific time, but I would like to know where and when it fits, is breakfast. So if we have 20 plus...
You guys talking about this? You guys don't need me.
I'm going. No, I need you to serve
me.
You
need to for that.
Okay.
All
right. Where does that conversation happen? Does it happen in this committee? Does it happen...
Yes, we had this discussion as well about breakfast, and we are going to sit down with Turnbull's about the high school for next year and possibly giving a hot option. Right now, it's like bagels and fruit and juice. So we are looking at that. At the lower levels, I have to go back to the contract and look, and this is where the language comes into play. I don't remember if we put a pilot in for Myers, because I know there was discussion under the previous superintendent of serving breakfast. So number one, it has to be in the contract in order for us to implement it at the schools that are on the National School Lunch Program. So I'm going back to revisit that. If it's not in the language, we would have to go out and rebid, because it's a significant language change. The other piece that I talked to Dr. Marseille when we did explore this last year is that there is some concerns on getting kids from the transportation portion, the amount of time in between getting off the bus or getting dropped off of school and getting into the classroom. So we had some discussions about possibly doing a grab and go, but then we would need to get assistance from the teachers, because kids would have to probably eat in the classroom. So there's some things to iron out with that, but we are definitely in the discussions about it.
And I'm very interested in exploring a breakfast program at the elementary level. And the data that I've been looking at for our district, I can suggest that some literature that I've been reading around the importance of breakfast, especially for a portion of our population that may not have the ability to provide that on a daily basis, is something that came up recently. So we'll follow through and find out what the language is. And also another conversation for another time is really about not just during the school experience, but also over the summer.
Yes.
So when you think about, you know, times that we're not in school for whatever reason, there is a large number of students who, for a myriad of reasons, families can't provide that that nutritious lunch that is often provided here and for breakfast. So we're really interested in looking into how we can better support some of our families through that process.
When did we go out to bid with this? Like, what time of the year?
Sometime in the spring of.
Okay, so we have until next spring to
15.
Is it?
And could we explore if we're thinking about moving in the direction of a lunch program for the summer? Really, what our foundation could bring in terms of defraying those costs?
Oh yeah, yeah, that's what.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. I reached out to a couple. The impromptu conversation that you and I had, and I bumped into the intermediate last week, and we have it in calendar. And then you have several of the rabbis who, in conversation, really provided information I didn't know, and provided and wanted to partner up with the district in terms of, here's the type of service that we provide. What we're finding is that our Chutney neighbors are not tapping into that as much as outside community members are, who are coming in and joining that process. And a lot of that is just really optics. And we got to work with our counseling department to defray the those who are extremely humble and prideful with the idea of going in and admitting that you just don't have the resources. So we have to find really creative ways and supporting individuals who desperately need it but won't go out and come and
and get it. And from a family that struggled, I want to tell you that my parents are extremely proudful, and they would not go and take, even though there was need to go and take. And for the longest time, we did not apply for free and reduced lunch because of how proud they were, and they didn't want to have that stigma. So there has to be some creative ways of how we help families and so many organizations that we can partner up with to support us with that.
There is a summer lunch program, a summer feeding program. Public funds. I don't know if we can do it through a school district. I'll try to look back through some articles.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know if we can do it through a school district. Township would have to do it if we could do it together. These typically happen in communities on playgrounds. Somebody will show up with the prepackaged food to the playground. That's why I say it may not be us. It may. But I'll make a note of that to try to dig and find some of this information. I've read amazing stories about Philadelphia, obviously, but down in Upper Darby as well, where there was a struggling to be able to continue to run the program out of a garage.
Yeah.
Nobody else there would do it. So I'll try to find out if this funding is available and let you know.
Thank you. Public questions, comments?
Here.
Yes, ma'am.
Sarah Vernon-Sturman from Wincote. My children are elementary school aged. I'm excited to hear about what happened with the high school cafeteria. I'm curious at the elementary level whether there is monitoring of how much food just gets thrown in the trash. And I know in particular when this shift to the healthier menus happened, there was just huge amounts of food that was thrown in the trash. So you wouldn't know it if you were just monitoring kids going through the line. You would see it when you looked in the trash cans. I don't know how that has played out more recently. I lost that battle with my kids and we were done. But it is an important thing to consider as what, because the utilization will mask over that. The kids will eat the parts they like, and then vast amounts of stuff just gets completely chucked. So I would just ask, sort of as part of an ongoing thing, that be something that gets paid attention to.
Yes, and that's, I think the chefs, the schools, and those types of programs are trying to expose students so that when they go through the lunch line, because unfortunately, with the National School Lunch Program, the kids have to take the components. Mm-hmm. And I've monitored the different, especially at elementaries, and sometimes and they do a good job, the lunch ladies do, sometimes they figure out how to get them to take an apple, because if I want an apple, and they have to take an apple, so it's considered, otherwise they can't give them the free lunch.
But then they just...
And then they do pitch it. But I think with the chefs to schools and seeing the way that they're doing things differently with healthy food and making them chips and their actual Brussels sprouts or kale, that helps. So I think those
I think there's opportunity for being civic-minded around, and I don't know what the regulations are, for if there are items like those fruits that you're not eating and you don't want, is there an area where students can place them? But I'm not really sure from there, we can't recycle them through the cafeteria. You have to work with an outside agency to say, if you guys can come pick up daily, here's a carton or a box of apples to do that. So there could be opportunities to think about that, about that process. But Cheyenne, she will toss a lot of stuff, or come home with everything. And we're like, what did you eat? And you're thinking, should I just close this back up, put it in the fridge, and take it out tomorrow? Do I have to make all in those set? So yes, that is, I understand that.
I also do sometimes hear about long lines at EP. Where there is a shorter lunch period. I think that's a long line for specialty items and not necessities, but just anecdotally.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I have two questions. One, we talked about water. I see where at Glen's Elementary, they are Deer Park delivers water. Is that, I mean, is that for everybody or is that just for, because you talked about filtering water and all that, but Deer Park delivers water.
Yeah, there's the nurse's office has to have that water in their office, and that's what the Deer Park water is used for.
And then the other thing I have is with the children having bags of snacks. And I supposed to get them from to the school, and then they take them out and pay them out, you know. Or they put them in the trash can. I have had a dissertation on your trash cans at the elementary, and they're just not good. Yeah. And they always filled up, and these little bags fly away in the wind, or the children toss them, and it's always messy. All the way down to the bottom of the school. This one maintenance man said, we should make them keep the trash inside. I don't know, I probably agree with him. I mean, we shouldn't have high paid maintenance people go out there and pick up trash. That's not good. That's, you know, that's not a good use of resources, in my opinion.
Can you be, I mean, this is just an idea, I mean, with combining with possibly a pilot program with the township where, you know, downtown they have those trash cans that are a little bigger, mm-hmm. and you can actually recycle by putting your trash in different sides of the trash can. That may be something that we may want to pilot with the township, and we might have somebody be able to donate those for free just to see if they work better.
Yeah. I do. I agree that there's probably two factors. One, the education piece in terms of what's being brought in and out. And second, the capacity of the actual receptacle in terms of them being full all the time. And obviously, they're being used because they're full all the time. So two ways to attack that process.
And the other thing is they're scheduled to be emptied by the outside, by the ground crew, not by the inside. And so they come once a week whether they need or not. And they come in like two steers and maybe three don't fly. Instead of the guy from the inside walking around, okay, this one needs to be filled with replaced.
Okay.
And I imagine it's a union deal. It's probably a union negotiator. And I don't know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So much.
This
concludes this school board recording. This recording is copyright by KD3HW and is released for free distribution under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivations 3.0 United States license. Podcast sounds courtesy of freesound.org. See the acknowledgement page of the podcast website. Thank you for downloading us, and have a great day.